Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. She's Beautiful When She's Angry explores the history of the women who founded the modern women's movement from 1966 to 1971. The documentary takes its audience from the founding of the National Organization for Women to the emergence of more radical factions of women's liberation, telling a proud and reflective story about feminist accomplishments and a few missteps. The film combines dramatizations, performance, and archival footage, along with interviews with women who fought for their own equality, and in the process, created a worldwide revolution. The New York State Writers Institute will present a screening of She's Beautiful When She's Angry tonight at 7:30 at Page Hall on UAlbany's downtown campus. A Q&A with director and award-winning documentary producer Mary Doerr will follow the screening, and she joins us now. Mary, welcome to the Roundtable.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking to me.
The film was released in 2014. When did you begin working on it, and why?
Well, it's kind of an embarrassingly ridiculous story, actually. I have two sons, twins, and I started working on it before they were born, and they're 25 now.
Oh, wow.
So that gives you, so that gives you a little sense. But, if, you know, I'm a filmmaker. I've worked a lot in television. I've done independent films, too. And so it wasn't like I spent all those years working on the film. I was like, I would try to get somebody to be interested in it, and they'd always say, no, nobody cares about this. It's been done before. And I have to admit, it took a long time, but it was one of those things where, in a way, it was good for me because it really, really ticked me off that people thought that women's history was not important. So, you know, I just kind of would go into it, out of it, depending. And then we finally got a grant around 2010, and that was how long I had to wait to start really doing it. And we did our first filming then, and then we, you know, would go on and off depending on how broke we were and whether we had any more funding, because that's the way films work nowadays.
Right, that's the business. The film contains many, many interviews and threads all beautifully woven together through relevant sort of headlines, kind of topics. How did you go about organizing all of that information that you found?
Well, it was very tricky because it's not kind of a basic, you know, the way a lot of people do their documentaries about an event is that, you know, they make it completely basically in daily order, which we did not want to do. I really wanted to show the immense diversity of the movement and the fact that it really wasn't about people who were famous or getting into the press. It was about these extraordinary women who across the whole country, basically on their own with, without computers, without any internet, without any way to do anything, they managed to start these amazing organizations that were very, very powerful and also discovered some things that were really important, like personal is political and things like that. You know, these were things that just kind of popped up because there was just so much buried frustration about the role of women in the country.
You just used the word diversity, which I want to hit on this one topic. There are, and the film admits it, which I think is really important, there are missteps within the movement, of course, things that don't work, mistakes people made, and some of that includes not allowing, at times, the women's liberation feminist movement to be diverse enough. It was a lot of white women and you. What made you realize it was important to include that it wasn't like all sunshine and roses as soon as it started and everybody agreeing? There were still, of course, problems.
Well, you know, one of the downsides of making a documentary is that you don't get to have little tags at the end like you can in a book and explain everything, you know, because I was covering a lot of stuff. It was a very challenging time because, you know, many of the women in the film, white and black, were very active in the civil rights movement. But it was also a time when, at that point, there was sort of a separation because it became more about black power. And it was very complicated for black women to want to join organizations that were primarily white, for obvious reasons. So I looked into that, and I found these amazing people, some of whom I had known from before, who talked about how complicated it all was. And it was complicated. But, you know, I also tried very hard, and, you know, this is something that not everybody would agree with, is that it was, you know, there's a stereotype about the women's movement that was part of why nobody thought it was worthy of another film, was that, you know, that the women in the early women's movement, these are the very first people who were starting to do it, you know, is that, you know, there's this kind of negative stereotype that women were all, you know, they were all bourgeois, they were for money, they were all white, they were racist, they were, you know, anti-lesbians, et cetera, et cetera. And elements of those are true, but it's not the big picture. It's something that's been really kind of whipped up in a much stronger way than it should have been. But I, of course, wanted to show the different ways that different people in different, both whether it was a racial issue or a point of view or being gay or whatever it was, that they were ways that they found ways to fight back and get attention for what they really believed.
I absolutely love in the movie when you're able to, and you are many, many times able to, show footage or images of one of these women in the 60s and 70s, and then cut to them now talking about what they learned, what happened, how it was, how it felt. How did you find all of the older footage?
I'm kind of a complete, I'm basically a nerd, let's face it. I'm basically the kind of person that I went to, I've done a lot of archival. I've made a lot of archival films. So I spent a lot of time in the local, because I live in New York, I basically spent a huge amount of time at the TV stations. And I was very worried all along that this was going to be so impossible to make because, one of the biggest parts of the early women's movement was the whole issue of being in, groups together and talking about your lives. And that was certainly something that mostly would never be filmed for obvious reasons because it was private and emotional. But I did find more stuff, and I also found great characters. I'm very old school. I went and pre-interviewed a whole bunch of people, and we went across the country because even though I live in New York City now, or actually Brooklyn, which is kind of different, but still the same.
it's a borough, yeah.
sort of. But anyway, I grew up in Maine. I joined the women's movement in Boston. That's why I was so in my first group was basically all about our bodies, ourselves. We were studying it. We were trying to set up a women's health center, which did happen later on. And so I really didn't want it to be one of these so frequently, films that are made that sort of focus too much on New York, because, of course, New York does have more footage because it's got it's a media center. And a lot of very important women were here. But I wanted to sort of show that it was all over. It wasn't about just, people who were in a big city. It was all over the place.
With it being all over the place, other than the media aspect of it, was it different? Were the priorities skewed differently depending on where people lived? If they were in a less metropolitan area, did it feel different? Was the movement different?
No, I can't really stay on that because, in some places, one of the big differences in the film is, there were some women who were very, very attached to being a part of NOW, National Organization for Women, and then which was more basically, I wouldn't say middle class, but it was basically a lot of women who were trying to scrape their way up to having decent jobs and things like that. Whereas then the other groups were more out of the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement. And so they had different perspectives and they worked on different ways. But they also collaborated more than you would think. Like when the section around Chicago and the whole thing about the Jane Abortion Underground Collective, NOW and the women who were really doing that very dangerous work that could get them jailed in a minute, they worked together all the time. So, yeah, there were differences, but I don't think that it was, massively so. But people did focus on what was important to them and their community because there are different needs in different places. But they also really, the part that always astounds me is the fact that they managed to do this, by sort of sending each other, they'd write their different kind of point of view about what they were going to do about rape or what they were going to do about abortion or what they were going to do about, everything else that needed to be changed. And they managed somehow to just spread like wildfire. In other words, it wasn't like, you're in Oklahoma and no one's going to hear it, dude. They shared all these things. They had conferences. They did all these amazing things. And with nothing, with no money, with nothing on their side, and they still did it. So people were not massively different, but there were definitely different choices. As the film shows, there's choices about power and who's going to be leading and who's not going to be leading, which I think is a forever, ever, ever. It's always going to be true in many groups that are, active because people do want to do it their way versus someone else's way. But for the most part, it wasn't, ugly like that. It wasn't terrible. But they were definitely different sides, and I felt it was very important to show the difficulties because, frankly, there's no progressive or any kind of movement that doesn't have those issues, and oftentimes I find them kind of erased from documentaries that I've watched, that they are very careful about it. So So, you know, I wasn't careful about it. I just wanted to put it out in a straight way. This shows these things are hard. They really are hard. And, you know, and nobody knows everything, particularly when you're basically taking a huge adventure. Because, I mean, that's why I focused on the very earliest women who were basically doing the women's liberation movement, because I felt like, how do you start something from nothing? And they did.
As I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, the film came out in 2014, and of course, since then, there's been enormous women's marches all over the country and a resurgence of the feeling of importance of these types of issues. Does that surprise you? Or did it when it started?
No, it doesn't surprise me. It thrills me. And they were definitely, I mean, we show some early, you know, there was a lot of misunderstanding I found between the generations when I was talking to different people about the film and, you know, who I wanted to interview and stuff like that. And, you know, I know some of the older feminists were very frustrated because they felt that the youth was not speaking up in the same way that they had. But, of course, they were, you know, as I tried to make clear to some people anyway, is that, you know, a lot of what they were doing was online because there were all kinds of blogs and all kinds of, you know, magazines that nobody was seeing, but they were reading it on their computer because there was earlier, you know, there was activism even when I was working on it. But it was still pretty disparaged, which basically I think women's history is often disparaged as not seen as very important. All of, you know, there were those differences. I also knew that there were, you know, I went to, you know, I still go to marches, I still do all that stuff, and I see so many young people who are so jazzed up, and it's about everything, whether it, not just women's issues, but also the environment, everything you can think of. And it's very thrilling to me to see that. I'm really, really happy.
I'm not going to remember because I didn't make note of it, but one of the people in the movie says that in a way it was good that the women's movement in the 60s and 70s didn't know that much about the suffragists because they didn't know the amount of the obstacle they would be facing. They knew that it had happened, but they didn't know all the details of how hard it would be. So they were able to be like, well, they did it, so let's do it.
Well, it was because basically very little about women's history is taught in grade schools, high schools, and in colleges. And, you know, to me, that was a very revealing moment. The person who talked about that issue, the issue of why we didn't have any history of the, you know, so what was going on in the suffragist movement and everything, because nobody was taught that. And the woman who's talking about that is Carol Giardina, who's a professor now. It's utterly true what she says, because basically, as another person in the film, Ruth Rosen says, you know, she was getting her master's degree in history at Berkeley. And she knew nothing about anything in women's history. She hadn't been taught anything about women writers, women artists, women anything. It was, you know, that whole story was not important. I mean, one of the ironic things that's happening now is it's not funny, it's nice actually, but the, you know, I don't know if you've noticed this, but the New York Times now is printing all these obits on people.
Yeah, people that weren't
mostly
featured.
People of color and a lot of women that they never, never thought were worthy of getting put in the paper when they died. And that tells you the same story.
Another thing that I've noticed since 2016, at least, is I don't have any kids, but my friend's daughters have a ton of books about women in history and recent history and further back with, you know, a little write-ups about them. And they're often beautifully illustrated, which makes them interesting no matter how young you are. But you're, you know, sneaking them a bunch of their own history as you read them these kids' books.
No, it is great. I actually gave some to my nieces and nephews already, you know, and I also, I'm the mother of two boys and I'm married to a man. So basically I live in a very male grown circumstance here. But at the same time, you know, I find, you know, I also have a lot of hope that men are actually learning this stuff too.
Not just
girls. It's interesting because, you know, some people think, oh, you know, I see a lot of negative stuff online because I watch too much of it to sort of see what people are thinking about. I think there are men who are really trying, and then, unfortunately, there is a massive, never-ending list of men who do vile and disgusting things that we hear about in the newspapers every single day. But, you know, I don't want to blame an entire gender for that. I just know that they're, you know, it's still really bad.
The New York State Writers Institute will present a screening of the documentary film She's Beautiful When She's Angry tonight at 7:30 at Page Hall on UAlbany's downtown campus. Mary Dore will be there for a Q&A following the screening. The doc is also available on DVD and on Netflix. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. Mary, thank you very much for your time and for the beautiful film.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.